Okay. We've got some. Okay. Well, thank you very much. With the help of the Almighty, I pray to the Almighty to bestow upon me His truth, His wisdom, that I may be worthy of conveying this truth to such an august gathering, and so that we may be able to sanctify His name and, inshallah, bring peace to the world. Amen. Assalamu alaikum. It is again for me a great privilege and honor that I'm able to speak here, and I didn't know, I'm just learning. Mulana Elia, Mulana, I suppose, as I hear, is like Mori, Chacham, yes. And so I'm learning, this is from Urdu, the Mulana. And I'm very thankful for giving me this privilege to have an opportunity, a hand in sanctifying God's name and to bring peace is from the greatest attributes. As we all know, Salom is one of the attributes of God. In fact, by Judaism, the names, and I understand that in other deaths, we have to keep certain, we're not allowed to desecrate holy books and things, and then, the names of the Almighty, Salom is one of the names of the Almighty, the attributes of the Almighty. Peace also means whole. So to be able to have a part in bringing peace, in rebuilding what they call rebuilding bridges, is something which is a great honor and a privilege. So I'm very thankful. And of course, I'm thankful for all of you for coming. Again, as I said, all of us, we have such busy schedules. It's time is so precious, and to come and to listen is something which I'm humbled and thankful for. Every day, the Satan doesn't sleep, we know, and we are taught that every human being has to always be trembling and fearful that he should not fall into the trap of the Satan. One is never certain of himself, should never be certain. It says, blessed is the person who is fearful constantly. Fearful that he may come to sin. It says even a person who is old, white, old person, should never be convinced and guaranteed that he won't stray from the right path, or else he doesn't have a purpose on this world. The purpose is constantly to overcome tests on this world. So we pray constantly that God should lead us in the right path. And we see occasionally how the Satan is able to, every day comes with new tests. What does it mean, new tests? If it would have been written in the books, or the exact same happening would have happened before, prior to that, then we are certain many people, most people, are searching to do the right thing, and they wouldn't fall prey to the works of Satan. But constantly, in every generation, and every day, something new comes, something unique, a new test. Let's just give an example. Our grandparents and parents knew they brought up children, and they taught them a moral existence. They taught them modesty. And in our generation, in a certain manner, you can say, well, we have been fortunate and blessed that we're able to have education and education system, and you can print books, and everything is given to them. At the same time, there's television. And if that wasn't enough, then there's video, and now there's internet. And internet is something which can destroy a home, it can destroy children, it can destroy grown-ups, and it does. Not only it does. At the same time, there's certain good attributes that come from it. So every time we have new tests, and to overcome them and to be wise, one of the great rabbis said that a person has to be God-fearing and wise in order to be able to serve the Almighty, because if not, you constantly can fall prey to the tricks of the Satan. This is nothing really on this basic issue, but to let a child have internet in the room or whatever, I mean, it's like giving poison to somebody, you know, and that tastes good, and not letting them know it's poison and telling them it's a good candy, and you just have to be careful how much to eat from it or whatever. I mean, it's not a really good parable. There's a lot more to go, but I'm just mentioning it because it's such a thing that's prevalent and it's so hard today, and it's so accepted in this world. Internet. Of course, there's much more than that. You know, in our communities, we try to be much more careful. Even in the homes, it's not allowed. And there's filters and this and that, and certain rabbis don't allow it at all. But again, this is a side issue. I'm not going to go into this issue of internet. I just mentioned that every day we constantly have new tests. Even in the most a person who's living in an insulated community, in a religious society, religious community, has tests. There's no such thing. You cannot escape it. Or again, the purpose we believe on this world is to sanctify God's name, to elevate everything around oneself, to elevate in the person's whole life, to elevate, to sanctify the Almighty by elevating himself, by accomplishing the purpose of God, of sanctifying God's name. And the pinnacle, as I said, is when the whole world will recognize one God and serve him in harmony. That's what it's all about. So therefore, nobody can escape these tests. I'm mentioning this because just now, last night when I went home from this beautiful meeting that we had last night, I was informed that, again, one of the Zionists, one of their chief rabbis, what they call, again, I explained that they created a rabbinate as a window dressing for what their misadventures, their misdeeds, their illegitimate existence. They created a rabbinate to give it an aura of holiness and to a legitimacy as if it's going according to the Torah. And they made a rabbinate. That means like a system of rabbis, a court system, a supposed Jewish court system, although that's not their regular court system that they live their lives by. And they pay people to be their rabbis and rabbinate, and they give them the greatest respect, and they announce them all over in all the newspapers and where every country they go to. And in truth, unfortunately, even in Arab and Muslim countries, sometimes you'll find that they have meetings with imams and with heads of state and things like that. And to us, we look at it so that what a terrible thing this is, because these people, all they're there for is to represent and to legitimize an evil that is being done to the Palestinian people. That, what makes them, because they've studied, and it's somebody who studied in university a field of medicine and uses it to commit a tests on people that are that kill people or things like that. He said because he's gotten his degree in medicine, he should be referred to as a doctor. This and that. You know, if he's doing harm and he's killing and murdering, then what gives them a right just because he has the doctorate in his hands? I mean, the same thing with a rabbi. Just because he's gone through the education and he's gotten his rabbinical certificate, therefore, and he uses that to commit evil, that then the name is not befitting him. And as mentioned, our rabbis say that somebody whose inside is not like his outside, it says in Tosafot Kabbalah, but in other words, his deeds are not like his knowledge, then a stinking carcass of an animal, a dead carcass of an animal, is better than him. So it has nothing to do with knowledge. Again, we're talking about this famous, they took somebody who was a very knowledgeable person, happens to have an encyclopedia memory. His name is Avadya Yosef, and they made him the chief rabbi of Israel, the Sephardic communities. It happens to be that he comes from a schooling. His teachers were very great teachers, very holy men. But unfortunately, he sold his soul to the devil, and became the chief rabbi. They took him as a chief rabbi of Israel, and they blew him up more than, because there's many other great rabbis around the world, plenty. But the propaganda, the fame they gave him, they put him all the papers, and they make him this great, as if he's the great leader. And unfortunately, many people are conned into believing in what he has to say because they're gullible, and people are not, as a whole, are not learned in the religion, and they buy what he has to say. As I said, they use the concepts of Judaism, and they just twist it a little bit. For instance, like yesterday we were speaking about the concept of redemption. that we yearn redemption. I yearn redemption, but I don't yearn the state of Israel. Redemption is the metaphysical change in the world where all humanity will recognize God, and yes, we believe we will go up to Quds, to Jerusalem. But it won't be with guns, it won't be against the will of the people, it will be all the world together, we believe, will join arms and go up and serve God in Jerusalem. Other people have different beliefs, so we say to them, we're not forcing it on you. If it will happen the way we say, then you'll agree with us. We're saying to other people, take it or leave it. It's not an issue that we're forcing. We believe that it will happen one day, that God will, everybody will wake up, all the atheists will wake up and become believers one day, and everybody will go up and God will rebuild the temple of fire, in other words, that must be like a spiritual issue. That's because we say once a year, all the Jewish people who are religious fast in the middle of the summer. It's called Chodesh, the month of Av. It's in the middle of the summer, it comes out every year. And it's the day when both the first and the second temple were destroyed, and we fast on that day. We fast from sundown till an hour after sundown the next day, and we use certain symbols of mourning. We're not allowed to sit on chairs. We have to sit on the floor. That's a Jewish sign of mourning, and many other things. We're not allowed to eat or drink. And at the end of the day, by sundown time, we say the prayer, and which we pray to God that the Jerusalem was destroyed in fire and that God will rebuild it in fire. So in other words, it will be rebuilt by God and it will be a metaphysical change, as I say. And then we say that all the nations should come and join and will join and serve God in harmony. So Zionism, of course, is this transformation into a physical, totally different concept. Judaism is totally different. Everything is totally different. So I'll just touch on to the people I've heard before. But whatever it is, they use and abuse all these Jewish statements. When we speak about yearning for going back to the Holy Land, they materialize it. They make it something totally material concept, to take a piece of land. And they ignore the whole concept that a Jew is taught to be compassionate, that we're not allowed to kill, that we're not allowed to steal, and so forth. They take everything they as if they have the right to take banish the Palestinian people from the homes and so forth. So they totally misconstrue the whole Torah, and they have this in order to give it this the aura and the legitimacy. They use the Torah symbols and they use the Torah so maliciously, because these people really detest God and the Torah, and they took this concept and they made a chief rabbi. And like we said, when they decided to go to war, and whatever they do, and they decide to they destroy homes or whatever, they get it written off by with the rabbi's kosher symbol or whatever, you know, to say that it's okay. So now we just heard yesterday that there's this Avadi Yosef who became that chief rabbi. He's retired for many years, but he's still always giving out these venomous statements. And he again repeated his statement, it seems, he called the Palestinians evil, I believe, and he said that I don't want to misquote something that I didn't, but something like, you know, some of them should die, or they should die. I didn't hear the exact quote, but a terrible, repugnant quote. So we put out a statement with God's help against that, and we cringe around the world, the Jewish, when we hear his that he's speaking, because we expecting to hear something from him that's repugnant. But he's a wild man anyway, and he attacks other people, Jews, likewise, a lot of times, with his wild statements. Speaking about that, I just wanted to mention that there was once in Jerusalem, people were dying in Palestine, occupied Palestine, I don't know if it was in Jerusalem, people were dying from hunger at the time that Zionism was taking control. And because their income, as I again also mentioned, people went up to Palestine from the Jewish communities around the world for hundreds of years because they looked at this as a holy land, and nobody went there for monetary reasons to become rich. It wasn't a big place to go for business. People went there, rabbis who retired, people who had been given their lives as leaders of community. They wanted to live off the life in holiness, and they would take some students and go up to Palestine. And they were able to exist by using charities that came from their communities to support them. And so it was always the elite of Judaism that through the last hundreds of years who lived in Palestine from around the world. And they were, brought to the fact that they were very knowledgeable in the Torah, and therefore automatically they were very anti-Zionist when the Zionists started coming in the beginning of the 20th century. They lived door by door with their Arab Muslim neighbors and some with their old Christian neighbors, and they coexisted. When they would have to go pray, Yom Kippur, all the women went also to pray, because not every time the women would go to pray. So, but then the Muslim and Arab neighbors would babysit their children, and you know, there's many, many stories that we could say how they helped each other and coexisted, and that could be, you can ask from anybody who's from Palestine will remember from the older generation. There was one rabbi who was also a promising student of one of the leaders of Rabbi, I believe his, Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, of blessed memory, had somebody who was a student of his, or at least had studied by him part-time, and his name was actually Pesach Frank. And he was also a very, very brilliant man. And one of his children, being that they didn't want to take money from Zionists, one of his children, actually his belly swelled up from hunger and he died. And this was, I mean, it happened to many people. But so he went to his rabbi and he said, listen, they keep on offering me a job in the Israeli rabbinate. And I promise you, he said, I'll take the position. Well, they're not requiring of me anything. They're just that I should be one of their rabbis. Whenever I see anything wrong, I'll stand up and I'll object the way you've taught me. So he said, I believe you 100%. Whenever you're going to see anything wrong, you're going to get up and you're going to object. But in the Torah it says that if you take money from somebody, it's ma'adir einei chachamim, makes blind the eyes of the knowledgeable, of the wise, in the salat, that it twists divrei tzaddikim, the words of the righteous. The second you're going to start getting funded by them, you're not going to see anything wrong. As soon as you see something wrong, you're going to object, but you're never going to see anything wrong once you start getting funded by them. So he said that you shouldn't do it. This fellow did do it, and he became one of their rabbis, and he went along with, we say, they pushed the wagon. You know, he went along with what happened. Here you have the sad fact that Zavadi Yosef could have been a promising rabbi, accepted by Judaism around the world, and unfortunately he became what he became. He's pushing the wagon of Zionism, and it's just repugnant, and his statements are repugnant. And we put out a statement that I hope will be distributed possibly to the people here with them. Anyway, that is in regard to that. I just wanted to, a quarter if they wouldn't be time of prayer. Yeah, okay, so I'm just going to, in our teachings, one of the great books and many great books say that a person should constantly review how one should serve God. So even though you know it, but you should always review, and because that a person forgets and it gets etched into a person. So even though whoever was here yesterday, but I still just wanted to, I'm going to just touch on the main points, also something which is seldom heard. Just the main points of Zionism before I go further. I just wanted to understand the essence, the difference. Judaism is a religion, and Zionism is the transformation from religion, from spirituality into materialism. Judaism is the bond that Jews made on Mount Sinai to accept the covenant of the Torah, that means the 613 commandments that was written in the Torah. I mentioned yesterday also, according to the Jewish belief, every human being has to believe that God gave Moses the Torah, that states in the Torah that you should believe in one God, not serve idol worship, not kill, not steal, not commit adultery. And the person is a righteous human being. And if you're a righteous human being, then you will inherit the world to come. And that's clear by Judaism. It's not required to be Jewish. And people ask frequently, are you allowed to become Jewish? A person is allowed to become Jewish, but we discourage becoming Jewish. And it's not because that we want to exclude good from people or whatever. Every human being can serve God, and according to Judaism, you don't burn in hell if you're not a Jew. you know, like there's certain ideologies that have that you'll burn in hell or something. We don't say that's Judaism. I'm not coming out here to sell religion or anything like that. I'm just explaining our position that we don't, and therefore that was the main reason was probably that we were able to coexist in such harmony and good life together with the Muslim people because we accepted and respected that we were able to that we also were serving God and we had no problem of coexisting. And like I said, we're always grateful, the Jewish people, for the tremendous hospitality, friendship, and safe haven that was provided in every single Muslim and Arab country throughout history. The Jews sometimes were in a tremendous danger and escaped from lands, and I'm sure that the Muslim and Arab countries put themselves out and could have suffered by taking in the Jewish communities. And they took in the Jews in great numbers, and they were saved, and were required by God to show our thankfulness for this. So that's a very very important point. I said we have to discourage, because to accept Judaism means 613 commandments. Somebody who accepts that, the minute he accepted it, he's required to follow it, and he never can drop it. So a person becomes a sinner if he doesn't follow all the commandments, so we're supposed to discourage somebody from accepting it. But that said, that's not the point. The point that I just want to say is that, again, that it's not required to be Jewish to serve God, and we believe we can coexist, and we've always been able to coexist and shown respect. The Zionism is people who detested and rejected this bond that we made on Mount Sinai to uphold the 613 commandments. These people had a history already, maybe of 100 years of not being religious. They came from Jews who today is well known, it's called Reform Judaism. Reform Judaism started over 200 years ago, in which a movement of people started by somebody who was a knowledgeable in Torah, started a movement that they said, oh, God didn't give the Torah. And so the rabbis pick and choose what they want. They'll pick and choose what they want. In other words, they can use what the Torah they want, and they're going to reform, change the Torah. So they called it, that's what it's called, Reform Judaism. And they made this movement. They don't even uphold today the Ten Commandments. They didn't then, and they don't today. They don't hold the Ten Commandments, you know, that everybody knows is given to Moses on Mount Sinai. They don't uphold these things. They desecrate the Sabbath. We're not allowed to make a fire on the Sabbath. We're not allowed to. That means driving in a car, opening the light, whatever. It's totally ignored. And so we consider this a heresy and blasphemy, the Reform movement. It's never recognized. It's not accepted by the ones who are called Orthodox Jews. That means who have never strayed from the teachings of the Torah. A thousand years. We don't accept this as any manner a representation of Judaism. To us, it could be Buddhism. It could be anything else. It's just, calling it Reform Judaism is just a euphemism or whatever. It's just a nice way of trying to coat a blasphemous movement. And so we don't consider it Judaism. They use the name Judaism, and yet it's not Judaism. Then, after a while, Reform started over 200 years ago. Sometime later, much more recently, there was a movement of Jews who said, hey, you know, they went too far, they're too extreme. So they became more conservative. That's how conservative Judaism came about. And then there's a bunch of other names of evil, the Satan, they give themselves this and that. And of course, that was over 200 years ago. And then from these people who were non-religious, and their whole life was to become respected in the non-Jewish communities, in the secular, in the cultured communities. Basically, it started in Austria, in Germany. So they started. They tried to assimilate and become accepted. They became doctors, lawyers, scientists, and they went to all that. They looked for this. They were yearning to be accepted and to throw away their dress, the Jewish dress, that they shouldn't be recognized as Jews. This was Reform Judaism. Zionist, Theodor Herzl, most of these leaders of Zionism were from these parents, came from these parents and grandparents who had long thrown away their Judaism and were embarrassed with it. If a Jew would come from another part of Europe dressed as we did, because then they were horrified and they begged them to leave. They didn't want to be seen together with them. And this is a very well-known fact of Reform. They harassed the religious Jews more than a non-Jew would harass the Jewish people. This went on for many years. We like to say that, you know, we see God's hand in everything. Hitler came from Germany. And we say that, many people, we're not prophets, but rabbis said God was showing that they said we'll assimilate, we'll become cultured, we'll drop the religion, drop the religious garb, and we'll be accepted. So God showed where were the worst enemies of the Jews, the ones who came and searched out the Jews, came from this German high society, this cultured society, and they didn't say, "Are you dressed like a Jew?" They said, "Were you a quarter Jew? Was your grandparent a Jew?" Yes, into the gas chambers. So in other words, they tried to escape, and they said they'll assimilate and they'll be accepted by the world. And God showed them, this is what happens. From there, the worst enemy of the Jews came out and tried to destroy Jews. While in Hungary, my grandparents come from Hungary or whatever, which was a very religious society. Unfortunately, we also suffered terribly, but it was less degree than there. So everything is in the hands of God. But many other rabbis said that Zionism has had a hand in the destruction brought about Hitler as a punishment from God. Why? Because it says if we will rebel against God and we will try to throw away his decreed exile, then we will be punished, God forbid, and hunted like animals. That was, which I'm going to just explain very shortly. In other words, so let me just recap and go over. Zionism is a transformation from religion into materialism. These people, it was... It is to take to uproot from the Jewish people their connection to God. Till now, a Jew knew what his connection to, that his whole purpose in life is to serve God. It's a religion. Zionism says no. It is a nationalism. It is a political movement. We're going to have a piece of land. So that, in concept, is blasphemy. Is rooted in heresy against God. But in the actual action of creating a state, they are rebelling against the direct commandment of God. A prophecy that yesterday I mentioned is King Solomon gave us three oaths, a prophecy to the Jewish people when after the destruction of the temple, that we are not to return in mass, not to go up in large numbers back to the Holy Land. Secondly, we are not to rebel against any nation. We should be loyal citizens in every country we're residing. And thirdly, not to make any attempts to end exile. Zionism, by going to Palestine to create a state, they're in every facet of this, they're going back in mass, in large numbers, they're rebelling against the Palestinian people, and supposedly they're trying to end exile, because even though these people were heretics and detested the religion, but they go around, they use the Star of David, they use the symbols of Judaism, and they say we're the beginning of God's redemption. They call themselves in Hebrew the Eschalt of the Geula. I don't know, I'm sure you've heard maybe on the radio here in New York, that you hear it more often, like around, they make, you'll hear some very emotional music, and they say, thank God, after 2,000 years, we are returning to the land that God promised us. These people are heretics, they have nothing with God and the Torah, yet they'll talk about after 2,000 years, we're returning to the land of our forefathers. So in other words, they call themselves the beginning of God's redemption. When clearly stated, we're not allowed to make any steps towards this redemption. And not that it's possible, because you're trying to attain a goal that is totally not the goal that was supposed to. It's like somebody says, here, do me a favor, and catch that deer. And the person doesn't know what a deer is, so he starts going, and he goes and he catches a pig. So he says, I caught it. He said, what did you catch? I ran after it, and I ran as fast as I could, and here it is. He said, yeah, you ran the wrong direction, and you caught something else. It's totally a different concept. We were sent into exile because God said the nations that were prior to the Jews, the Canaanites, served idol worship, and they defiled the land, and they were sent out. We were warned by every single prophet, because about that, if we're not on a high level of pureness, we will be sent out of the land, and that eventually came about with the destruction of the temple. The resolution of this, the ending, the redemption, and so forth, is what? is when God will, with his compassion, will say, see that the time is right and that we are worthy and end this spiritual lacking that's on this world and bring his spiritual revelation to the world, and we will all go up and serve God. What we're missing is not a piece of land. That's not what we're missing. We're missing, like they say, you don't get it. We're missing the whole, they have the shell and they don't have what's inside. We're lacking this closeness to God. That can only happen if God brings us back to him. You can't buy it. You can't say, because I'm a millionaire, I'm going to have to put down the money now and pay for it. While Zionists came, they detested religion. They came along and they said, hey, you know what was wrong here? Well, our problem was we didn't have an army. We'll have a strong army. Nobody's going to be able to start off with us. How ridiculous. It was never with might that we won. And if you look in the Torah, people see that miracles happened when they were worthy, and they won wars when they were worthy. As I mentioned yesterday, the Maccabees were five people who won against the whole armies. Why? Because it was a miraculous happening. And not because they were able to. It's impossible, five people to win against thousands of people, which was the time of the Maccabees, when they were taken over by the Greeks. At the same time, when they were many, the kings, they lost one war after the other when it wasn't God's will. So it has nothing to do with a physical attributes. And the Zionists come along and say, it's a problem because we don't have an army. We'll have an army, we'll be strong, and then we'll be able to get back the land that God promised us. So their building of the land is rebellion in concept. It's a rebellion in action. Now this would all be, even if it had nothing to do with another people. In other words, if Palestine would have been a desolate land, uninhabited, we as a Jewish people would fight them tooth and nail because they're rebelling against God. We are forbidden to have any 1 inch of sovereignty. 1 inch of Jewish sovereignty is forbidden because we're rebelling against God's decree of exile. The fact that they came to Palestine to make their state in the national home, now they're rebelling against every other concept of the Torah. The Torah says, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, that you should be compassionate. You should emulate God. And Zionism came along, and in order to make their national home, they had a technical problem. There were people living there. What are they going to do with these people? So the first thing is, they had this media blitz going around the world that it's a land without a people, and these people are just nomads. And and the portrayal was for over 60 years that the Palestinian people, it wasn't their home. It was never Palestine. You always hear on the television, if you ever hear these debates, it was never a land called, it was never a Palestinian land. It was under the Turkish, under the Turkish, then later under the British mandate. So therefore, it was never the people of Palestine and things like that. And again, this is all repugnant and ridiculous. It was the people living there, it was their land, and it belongs to them, it's properly theirs, it should be theirs. And according to the Torah, it says we have no right to steal any piece of land from these people. So, but the Zionists came with this power of the microphone and the fact that at the Western civilization was the powers to be at that time. The West controlled. I mean, there was British had colonies. India was a colony of Britain, and all the lands was divided. I mean, according to their whim, Iraq, Iran, and all the, like, they divided the lands and sat at a table and divided between France and Britain and everything. They decided how to divide the land. So, being that they were the power, so the Zionists were able to go to them and gain control over land that wasn't theirs. And then, of course, again, the works of Satan, they created the United Nations. And the United Nations ratified the making of the land. But this, all of this is against the rule of God, against the Torah. You're not allowed to steal. It could be tens of United Nations. It would not give it one iota of legitimacy to taking the land away, the godly right, of taking this land away from the Palestinian people. And the Jews, who are true to Judaism, true to the Torah around the world, were opposed to this from the depth of their heart and soul, and they fought it. And they with God's help, I hope the copies were made here, I believe, yes. the copies are made of these. Yes, some of the is of the, you can see the statements of the chief rabbis of Palestine, the true chief rabbis of Palestine, where they pleaded with the United Nations that they don't want the so-called Jewish state. And then at the end, that there was Rabbi Sonnenfeld, 1924, we have a letter that he met because the Zionists were coming, so they had a special meeting the monarch, his name was King Hussein of the Hejaz, the great-grandfather, whatever, of the King Abdullah of Jordan. And again, he gave over the Jewish loyalty, and this was in 1924, and then again in 1947, again they pleaded that they don't want to stay. This is the fact of the Jewish opposition. I'm going to touch just an interesting little point, just to show that it's mind-boggling. Chaim Weizmann, you should just understand who Chaim Weizmann was, how the Zionism, how far they falsely represent Judaism, and that they and what their position was. Chaim Weizmann, in 1938, he was pivotal in getting the Balfour Declaration. There was the Prime Minister Ben-Gurion, the first one. He was the first Prime Minister. And it was Chaim Weizmann who was the first president of the state. He was somebody who helped Britain in World War I. It seems that they had a problem crossing over to Europe because the Germans were blocking it with they had the best ships and so forth, and they couldn't get supplies or something. Sometimes they needed some type of powder or something to be able to make weapons, to make bombs. And he was a scientist, and the works of Satan that he provided them with a technique in order to be able to create bombs or something like that. And they wanted to pay him back, so he said, "I don't need anything for myself." He wants for the Zionist movement, and they promised him. And basically, they got the Balfour Declaration. We have in also one of the statements how the House of Lords, one of the leaders over there made a statement and trying to argue with the fact that there should not be a Jewish state, it's written in their history, and if you look at the House of Lords, they have a book, and we have it again. It was printed in we have it printed in this book for you to write. But he writes that you forgive me. Like I say, this was just reprinted. I used to keep it according to my numbers of every single page where everything was. But right before I came here, they reprinted it for me. Here it is. It's called the Mandate, Palestine Mandate, the House of Lords, June 1922. And at the end, it says, in one of the pages, it's page 2, it says, "In saying this, I want to make it clear that I speak in no sense of hostility to the Jewish race." This is in 1922, they had meetings that they should help support the Jewish state in the House of Lords. And one of the lords mentioned, he said, "Very many Orthodox Jews, not only in Palestine, but all over the world, view with the deepest misapprehension, not to say dislike, this principle of creating a state." And you can see it in their writings. And they fought with this Lord Balfour. They considered it an idiocy, like a crazy idea to create this Jewish state. Some people say that he wanted to get the Jews out of Britain. That was his whole reason why he wanted that they should have a state, just get rid of them. That he really wasn't this great love that he had for Jews. Whatever it was, he promised Chaim Weizmann that they should be able to send the Jews to Palestine and create that the terrible thing called the Balfour Declaration. We would give them supposedly a name that they can make a Jewish state. Also, in the Balfour Declaration, it says that they should not do anything bad or harm the populace living there. But that's what he said. Now, so I just want you to know, in 1938, this was prior to the second, right at the beginning when the Nazis were being active and they were committing anti-Semitic crimes. They had a meeting, and the Zionists were on top of the news because they were very well connected, and they knew that the plan was to murder the Jews. So they had a meeting of the heads of the Zionists. And Chaim Weizmann, this great hero who was pivotal in creating the state, I'm saying it, of course, sarcastically, great hero, but anyway, he wrote like this, a statement that he made, and it's not refuted, it's in his own writings. "Palestine cannot absorb the Jews of Europe. We want only the best of Jewish youth to come to us. We want only the educated to enter Palestine for the purpose of increasing its culture. The other Jews will have to stay where they are and face whatever fate awaits them. These millions of Jews are dust on the wheel of history and may have to be blown away. We don't want them pouring into Palestine. We don't want Tel Aviv to become another old great ghetto. In other words, he said, let them become the dust of this, let them be murdered. We only want the culture Jews, the non-religious, not Jews like me. Let them all die. Now, if you would say that this was, again, written by a Nazi, or if you'll say it's written by an Arab leader, say, see that? The Arabs hate the Jews. This is their hero who supposedly they take this self-righteous stance against the Arabs. When the Arabs and the Muslim nations were the nations that took us in all through the times of history, by the Crusades, by the Inquisition, by World War II, they saved us. And this we call him Galagan, whatever, this devil had the nerve and the audacity to say, when they saw the Jews are being imminently destroyed and killed, he says, we don't want to take them in. This is a view of all the Zionist leaders, from A to Z, all of them. I'm not saying none of the Zionists try to save Jews. You'll have that also. You know, there's different parties and different people and different feelings. It's all wrong, either manner of them. But I'm just saying these are the leaders. These are the ones respected. You will never hear a bad word about, you know, Zionists. You'll never see all the pictures that we showed yesterday that we could, will, you know, again, people can see later the picture. We demonstrate in tens of thousands and we oppose them. But the facts are, because the Zionists have the media control. How do they get the media control? I'm going to finish right away now because we have to. Remember, it's the works of Satan, and it's a test for all of us. We never accuse them of being stupid or sloppy or something. We accuse them of being evil, but they're efficient. They have AIPAC. AIPAC, I'm sure you all know, is American-Israeli Political Alliance Committee. What they do is they concentrate against an individual. If somebody is running for office here in Washington, Seattle, and he takes a position that's too sympathetic to the Palestinian cause, then they'll throw in money against this one individual. So what happens is, and they did it in Atlanta, Georgia, twice, three times, Congressman Finley wrote a book about this. What they do is they target individuals. So what happens is every political person says, what am I, nuts? You know, even if they mean this, they mean totally, for the good of their communities, like they say, every politician gets up and says, I really came, I'm running for office because I want to do good, and we only mean good. Even in such a case, so he explains away to himself why he should not have gotten involved with Palestine, because he says, well, if I'm going to say a word about Palestine, then every other good deed that I want to do, I won't be able to accomplish, because I'm going to lose the elections. So they decide that this issue, it's a hot potato or whatever, they're not going to touch on. And they refuse to speak about being pro-Palestine. On the contrary, almost everyone, they go to the AIPAC convention in Washington, D.C. Everyone, the Democrats, the Republicans, everybody goes to, and they take a trip to Israel also usually. Of course, they get paid, fully paid, and they take the trip to Israel to show their support and sympathy. And supposedly what they're doing is they're showing they're not anti-Semitic. That's what they're supposedly doing, and that they're supporting, you know, the Jews should be out and have a place to live. So, again, we have to finish in like... Right now? Okay. So basically, I want you to understand, it's being confused, Judaism and Zionism. To stand in opposition of Zionism is not only not anti-Semitic, but it's the proper thing, it's pro-God. Zionism is the Satan, is the down, God to the downfall for Judaism. It is the greatest cause of anti-Semitism. It brings the greatest, unfortunately, to the world turmoil. It's doing to the Palestinians this terrible, terrible crime. We have to understand, so you're not anti-Semitic if you speak up against Zionism. You have to know, be knowledgeable. Come, with God's help, study more of these issues, and you will to get a clear view, so you shouldn't be intimidated. First thing, we should all pray for the speedy and peaceful dismantlement of the state, because everything is in God's hand. And God can bring about that it could end overnight with his compassion. At the same time, we must stand up and do, because God is righteous and God is compassionate. The people of suffering in Palestine over 60 years and in Gaza. And I didn't get into all these issues, but we went there. We constantly, our hearts are them. We have to These people need food, they need everything, medical aid, and every day that goes by is another day of tragedy, and sometimes people die and they can't even be saved or emotionally affected forever. We have to help and do for them, and remember, you be proud and don't feel that you are anti-Semitic or what they're accusing you of is something to be fearful. You have to be strong because you usually are accused of it, but once you know the fact it's not Judaism, you can stand up. And you have to understand that the more knowledge you can confront them and oppose them. With God's help, let us do that and pray, and let's pray for the day ultimately when God will bring this, that the time that we can again come together and be able to, that Jews should be able to show our gratefulness for all this, and the day when all humanity will recognize the one God, so we'll be able to bring this glory to God's name, which is what the purpose of this world, a peaceful, harmonic coexistence in the service of God. Amen. Thank you very much.